The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good yawning this morning. Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Aaron Green on this Tuesday, the 6th of February. A good morning. That's KB. Crime doesn't pay. I hope y'all heard that most important line. You wake up with somebody tickling you in prison. We have to show, in particular, young people that life on the outside is far better than life on the inside before they even get a chance to get there. And I don't know if we are doing that effectively. So it's Tuesday the 7th. It's a World News Tuesday with Mr. Mark Palmer. I'm not sure if he is back from the island yet. I'm expecting him to join us. But in the interim, let's call it Open Line Tuesday. Numbers to call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and 242-300-5720 for our family island residents. Well, look who just arrived in studio. Mr. Mark Palmer is going to be sitting down at the desk. Mr. Palmer.
Morning, Aaron. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I just tell the audience we're going to do a open line today on this World News Tuesday. There's lots to talk about. And so I open the line to you as well, Mark. I have some stories lined up for this morning. My sort of theme, what's in my head, is slightly different from World News Tuesday, but I think it works in. My question of the day is about crime, tourism, and the media. And how much news should we censor, if any at all, in the interest of protecting the tourism product?
So it was interesting, you know, yesterday I met some of our visitors from the United States, started talking to them, and that came up in conversation, mm-hmm. which was the U.S. advisory
right.
on crime. But it was interesting enough, she said that she actually looked into it in detail and realized that it was something south of the town or in the urban community. So mm-hmm. that was actually specified. I hadn't actually seen the advisory, but she said it was specified that that crime was not in tourist-related areas. But I don't know how she described it, but she said in the south of the island.
I think...
So that was interesting.
I think I saw an advisory that said, over the hill...
Okay.
I am not sure if that was a formal advisory or not, if it was a media interpretation of a formal advisory from the U.S. government or Canadian government. But I got...
Taken the view
yes.
To still come because she dug into it. And then her next comment was that, you know, in our communities... I forget where she lived in, was it West Cleveland? And then she said there's East Cleveland. I can't remember the exact town she came from, but she said where she lived was, suburbs, very nice. But then there was a part of town which she wouldn't walk into mm-hmm. and she wouldn't go into and, you know, wouldn't be surprised if there were warnings regarding that area. So I think what was interesting to me that tourists or visitors tend to be more, you know, aware and more sort of they look at these things in a more nuanced way than just, oh, we're not going because there's an advisory.
Right. They make a comparison. In fact,
in to their own communities as well.
Right, in an article yesterday, in an article from last week, hotels dealing with visitor safety concerns on crime, an excerpt from the article quotes Dionisio de Aguilar, former Minister of Tourism and Aviation. He echoed industry concerns that it is the nature and scale of international media rather than the travel advisories themselves that threaten to have the greatest consequences for the Bahamas. Confirming that he watched NBC's 1.5-minute segment on the travel alert, which aired on Saturday night, Mr. De Aguilar said it also affirmed that Jamaica and other Caribbean nations are facing similar crime-related challenges to the Bahamas. Mr. De Aguilar, though, was quick to make the point that, quote, every destination has its problems, close quotes, and that major U.S. cities are widely perceived as being more unsafe than the Caribbean as a whole. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, like you say, many travelers are aware of the nuanced or the, they put a critical lens on it.
Yeah.
And they say, well, listen, is it any less safe than where I live or work?
Yeah. I mean, it seems to be there's like a, for these warnings, there seems to be a trigger, right? Something triggers that warning, right? Mm-hmm. Now, and it's probably murders, right? So not perhaps other crimes, but, you know, those kind of very visible, you know, that have stories attached to them that are in the media. So that's probably what it is. And once you get a certain amount of murders, that probably triggers that. Well, I'm wondering if it is.
It's like an algorithm.
Right,
yeah.
If it's an algorithm or whether somebody actually physically makes that decision.
Yeah. I got a text here that says...
But obviously, it's not a good thing. It's kind of worrying. It's not a good thing generally to have these things
right
out about our country, for sure.
Well, here's a question. Because we know that our visitors are critical thinkers, right? They do a lot of research. They want to get a sense of of clarity on what's being printed in the media. Is the problem that we're not printing enough news around crime? Is there the risk that people become concerned because it appears as if we're hiding the news? It appears as if we're, I want to say, whitewashing it. You know, we're making it look better. We're using particular language. For instance, a question that I have constantly is, in media reports on cases of sexual violence where rape occurred or attempted rape, very rarely does the media use the word rape unless they are quoting someone speaking, or they are
assault,
or they're quoting a provision from the law, like what the actual charge is called. But a headline will be sexual assault when the matter being reported on is actually an instance of rape,
which is much more serious, right?
Right, and I wonder.
I you know, that's an interesting point you raise. I mean, with murders, you can't really. I don't think you can really whitewash them. I think that the term you're using, you know, murder is a murder. There's people, you know, who are affected, usually mothers, fathers, siblings. And so those stories do come out, you know, either social media or in the press. And I think that, you know, I wouldn't say that they were understating that part of it, because if they were, then there wouldn't have been this kind of this perception of panic. You know, there's some members of the community are panicked because of this increase in crime and therefore seeking solutions to deal
with
it.
Right. So here's a question. Are people panicked because of the increase in crime, or are people panicked because they get no sense of certainty or confidence from the authorities responsible, right, for responding to crime?
It's fear.
For eradicating crime, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm less worried. When a hurricane is coming, we're in the midst of a hurricane, far more concerned about the recovery period than the hurricane itself.
Right. Yeah.
That thinking what happens after the storm, how long will it take for power to be reconnected, which means how long will it take for my water supply to be reconnected, right? How long will it take for my neighborhood to be cleared of trees? I live in a pigeon forest, lots of trees, right? And so for me, I've been able to like calm myself in the storm. It's the fear or concern over the recovery period that has me...
Well, it's also the fallout from these murders. You know, it's like a repeating cycle mm-hmm. of violence, you know, tit for tat. You know, maybe we're not honest enough about why these things are happening. I think maybe that is an example of where we don't really, the media doesn't tell the full truth about, you know, the reality of, you know, behind the murders, mm-hmm. you know. And so maybe the lack of understanding about that could create fear as well, because you could just think, you know, society is going mad.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't really going mad. There's small sections of it that are, you know, going mad, to use that term.
Yeah. It's very interesting. So I throw the question on the table again for the audience. Should the government, the police, censor the news, crime reports in particular, in the interest or for the purpose of protecting the tourism product? The numbers to call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and 242-300-5720. For Family Island residents, it's toll-free. And, of course, the text line, 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. Mr. Palmer, we got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller.
Well, good morning, Aaron, and to your guest.
Good morning.
You know, I heard something said a few moments ago that caused me almost buck up. Somebody said that it's crime happening in the South. Over the hill, I think someone else said.
Well, no, what Mr. Palmer said was that the tourist that he spoke to referenced advisory and said to Mr. Palmer that they felt a degree of confidence that they would be safe because the advisory indicated that the majority of crimes are taking place in the southern part of the island, isolated from the tourist districts.
Yeah. Okay. So that being said, the tourists felt they were safer in the northern part of the island.
In the tourist district.
In the tourist area. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, downtown. What are we doing to police downtown that we're not doing throughout the country? Well, the country, We have 697 crime-free islands almost. So in the capital, what are we doing different from Bay Street? And should we take that model and duplicate it throughout the whole of the New Providence so that the whole place would be safe? Now, I sat Sunday in a restaurant on Bay Street that was not too full. And some tourists, a couple, sat next to me. And I asked them where they're from, as I always do. And they asked me eating on Bay Street. And that concerned me. I said, well, obviously you feel safe. You're in the same restaurant as I am. And so they went on to tell me some things that they were being told. I wouldn't repeat them on radio. And that astounded me.
So you
my
said,
brother coming to the Bahamas five years ago.
Were they cruise passengers?
They were cruise passengers.
Okay.
And I can speak to my brother's experience who came to the Bahamas on a cruise ship. He was told, there's crime. Do not leave the vessel with too much money, too much ID, credit card, etc. All you need is your cruise ship pass and a driver's license. So if he doesn't leave with his credit card and a lot of money, how is he going to come into my jewelry store or my straw market? See, we have to stop. And I'll leave you with what Glenys Hannah Martin said in 2017. And I subscribe to what she said on the radio show with Mr. Obie Wilstrom. We said that the port was necessary the way it was done. Cruise ships bragged about making $10 billion. I believe one cruise line, it was in the newspaper, I have it. Why did we not tax them? Just 10%, 1%. And fix our entire Bay Street from the bridge all the way to Chippenham by the fish fry and made it safe for Bahamians and for foreign visitors, they had to come out and shop with you, Aaron, selling your soursop jelly. You understand?
Absolutely.
And so I'm very disturbed, but I want the model on Bay Street put throughout the country because we've got policing right on Bay Street.
So
Lord knows.
So there's 2 points. The difference between Bay Street policing and policing on the rest of the island, right? And
yeah.
The second point...
Second point is we should have come up with a better model than allowing somebody to build
let me respond,
an area.
Graham, let me respond to the second part. There's an article in today's Tribune, Private Cruise Island set for VAT reform hit. It turns out that one or several cruise liners have been operating VAT-free. If I could read from the article just briefly, the government is planning tax reforms that will hit the cruise lines, Bahamian Private Islands, and end their nine-year VAT-free status. It was confirmed yesterday. Simon Wilson, the Ministry of Finance's financial secretary, told Tribune Business the changes currently set to take effect from March 1st are designed to place the cruise line's private island activities on a taxation level playing field, on a taxation level playing field with Bahamian providers who service their guests at other destinations.
So, Aaron, I have to interrupt. I'm on a cell phone, and before I lose the signal.
Mm-hmm.
Do the cruise ships pay 1% of their gross?
In
That's
tax?
The first question. Do the cruise ship and on their private islands, do they pay 1% of their gross? Because they're operating a business in this country.
I got you.
Because that's insane. Do banking and banking financial institutions pay 1% of their gross? Because I know these answers before I ask them. And it's astounding that we tax the bejesus out of the local and other activities. And it was published up to $3 trillion. Do they pay tax? See, the question is, and business licenses here, should we make the cruise ship pay on their projected future sales as if the Bahamian people are having to do on their business license?
I get you.
I leave you with this. Why don't we take the next 50 years and treat the foreigner the way you've treated the Bahamian and treat the Bahamian with the red carpet the way you've treated the foreigner? When I say foreigner, I mean if they come from Canada or the Caribbean. I gone.
Thank you, Graham. Thank you. I'm going to respond to that in a second. Let's go to the next caller. Good morning, caller.
Mr. Mark Palmer.
Good morning.
Hey, you know, I like to piggyback. Graham made a very, very interesting observation. And so, you know, the thing is, Ms. Green, you know, nothing he said can be... I see where, let's say with the cruise industry, we look at the cushions that the government gives, like foreign investors, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we would look at the Cocoa Keys and the Castaway Keys that they have casted us away from, right? So we the question then becomes: I got upset when you said that they were operating VAT-free, which is criminal, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now another thing that's criminal is we give these people our islands, and can you find out for me some investigative journalism here if they pay environmental taxes? Because there's no way you can tell me anthropogenic activity or human activity is taking place on islands, and there's no oversight. There's no one to even go around, check the waters to see for fecal matter or any human contaminants in the coastal regions of these islands, even proper sewer systems working. See, I work in engineering for years, and I know it would be a lacking.
Mm-hmm.
If you're lacking oversight, the same thing, this is how the shanty towns blossom into this particular model, and nobody's to blame, but the finger always points at the people who run the country, you know. You know, if I have to pay to go on a port to go to a concert, that doesn't. It's still a path I'd like. So what I'm saying is, this is the reason why I don't fund these people, because we are always getting the bad end of the stick. So Graham showed you and highlight a scenario in which from Chippenham to the bridge, even as far as Montague. So when we look at, I rode around recently and I see how dark these areas are. They're poorly lit.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling me you're trying to solve crime? Look at the area just west of the fish fry. Look at the area out west at the Goodman. These areas are dark. It's darkness. What you talking about?
Yep.
And these people are not concerned. These people are blinded by what I don't know. But I go by what I observe. And the problem is with Bahamians, us. We are our own enemy. If I come on the airways and screen, and I say this, right, or asinine, and I don't expect for someone to criticize or critique what I'm saying is, what is the reason for radio talk shows? Education, inform, and entertain, and critique. Give thanks.
Yes, thank you, 52. Thank you very much. Let's go to the next caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Eric.
Morning, how you do?
I'm fine. Good morning, Palmer.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. You don't have a producer today, so I gotta say.
No, man, I have a producer. First of all, every day I have the best producer on the board. Every day. Don't matter. Week to week, month to month.
I miss your voice today, there.
I can tell him that.
Yeah. Listen, You mentioned censor. Don't mention that word because you only had one TV station back then.
Mm-hmm.
Mama could tell you about that. Mama lived in my town, right, Mama?
That's true.
So in the end, you say, you cut you off, they cut the pocket off, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be harsh on the government.
Mm-mm. And I agree.
Sex score, Palmer. Hello?
Pardon?
Yep.
Oh, Palmer saying something?
No, he was just assenting, you know, to what you're saying.
Right, so. Every your auntie should tell you about that. Your grand auntie should tell you about that. Enough. But on the second thing here, Mary, as we exercise our human rights,
mm-hmm.
we're knocking down all these yachty dance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't we have a plan to two things? Place the people into an area of movement or those who are illegal, send them back home?
Pumpkin eater, I mean, first of all,
there's no plan.
Hold on. First of all, they have been attempting to knock down the shanty towns for a number of years. Remember, an injunction.
Of course,
no, it didn't pause the process, but it required more work, right? And you had to come to the court to ensure that you have followed the procedure properly. So, I with you for at least 5 years, right? The government has told us that it intends to knock down, to demolish shanty towns. So, in 5 years, they could not identify an area, draw up plans, create temporary or permanent housing provisions for people with status, people who are working and could afford to rent a place. So that before you demolish the building, you have already placed the family in the building in a government-approved housing situation.
Yeah, and it should charge the people who own the properties and allow these things. They should go before the court.
I mean,
so this thing was not planned
at all. And see, it's one thing to say, well, they're illegal migrants. What do they expect?
Right.
Well, here's what I, a citizen with rights to be in the country, rights to work, rights to speak, says. That state, you also have an obligation to provide for these people. Like you say, until you determine that they do not have status or that they have breached the conditions of their status and need to be returned to their destination of origin, then you have a statutory, an ethical, and a to ensure that they live with the basic standards.
And Aaron, they have a case. Now, for them to win that case, they need to put me in university. So I get my lawyer degree, get called to the bar, and they'll win a case. They'll win millions of dollars off the government.
I would you.
Okay.
Let's encourage
them. Hold up, let me close with this.
Yeah.
They are human rights. We have a sign on the Human Rights Convention.
Mm-hmm.
It's being violated. Mm-hmm. It's in their fault. It's the immigration fault. Who ain't going after these people? Now, what's going to happen in the future?
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching both governments. What's going to happen in the future now? What plans do you have in place? These conditions won't repeat. And what plan now, I repeat this plan, that the people on the private land, who own the private land, need to pay the taxpayers because they've been using our water, using our light, and the private people have been making money renting these people PPs and properties on their private land.
Well, I tell you what, I don't see anything changing because I don't see land and landlord-tenant regulations.
Being charged.
I mean, no, regulations being produced. They haven't even produced them, right? Real regulations and policy to cover the obligations of the landlord, the obligations of the tenant, the obligations of the landowner and the leasor, right, and the lessee. They haven't even talked about that. We haven't seen any movement on building of affordable rental housing, understanding that the vast majority of people in the country will never be able to afford land on New Providence and cannot afford to put in the proper infrastructure for a basic life on the family island.
And the vast majority of the people who have done are the vast majority of children who go to our school system and going to be citizens at 18.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So these was not planned out by my majority rule lawyers. Bunch of lawyers in Parliament haven't planned it out. My majority rulers, I like to say, based on my human rights convention, based on my human rights advocacy, I cry shame.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Have a good day. Pumpkin Eater, one and only.
Thank you, Pumpkin Eater.
So, Aaron, you know, very good. These are very good points. And I think you said as well that you didn't think things are likely to change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that you cannot build a new house on the same foundation, right? And I think the caller referenced the land issue, right? Mm-hmm. Several times. You know, if the foyer was in existence, the first thing you would go in and find out who owned that land, right?
Yes.
Because I remember there was a cabinet minister many moons ago who said that that was the critical issue, and we would be shocked if we knew who owned the land, right?
Absolutely.
So ultimately, that structure has to change. Otherwise, you know, the removing the structures on the land is a Band-Aid, right?
Yeah.
That's a Band-Aid, but we're not dealing with the cause again.
Absolutely. Let's go to this caller. Good morning, caller.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, good. I wanted to say, you know, with this immigration problem, broken record,
mm-hmm.
and I know there are a lot of complexities, but, you know, basically the person that is illegal, right, is wrong. The enforcers, which is the government and the person who was put there to carry out our laws, is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we need to start moving on doing some things. I mean, I know the problem is really way out of hand, but if we don't start moving and making those hard decisions, and they are hard decisions because you're dealing with humans, but you can't come into a country and feel entitled and not follow the rules. And yes, we do. We should have people policing and making sure they follow the rules. But, you know, you're not going to always be 100%, right?
Right.
And I know they're moving with the shantytown issues, but, you know, I, for one, don't agree with this 28 days notice. I think that should be countrywide once the notice is given. 28. If you're serious about cleaning up the issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the excuse of, well, you know, Bahamians are aiding and abetting. If they are, they should be held accountable. If someone has gotten a work permit for you, they are required to find housing. If they have not, it is a simple issue. When you look at them coming to renew, that needs to be verified that the persons that you got the work permit for, you have actually provided housing, proper housing. And if they haven't, you cancel the permit and you fine the person. And, you know, we have to stop making excuses as if this is something so hard to do, because while we're making excuses, the problem is getting worse, right?
Yes.
The issues are getting more complex, mm-hmm. right? And we have a lot of other issues to deal with, you know, as far as social, you know, issues,
so,
right?
And I want you to respond to something. Most people overlook the fact that political parties have always used migrants to produce a new loyal voting bloc. I want to say this. If I tell you this, I want you to give me your response. I say the first step in dealing with the issue is demanding that the Prime Minister address these three statements, right? The first statement mm-hmm. was echoed a couple of years ago by state actors saying that the economists that sort of supervise our economic system, our economy, that they say that we need a million more citizens, taxpayers, to maintain the lifestyle that we've become accustomed to. That's one. The second is when the Minister of Foreign Affairs stated that we need the labor, right? Like, why are y'all upset at migrants? We need the labor. And the third is a second statement he made in that same article where he sort of implied or led us to infer that directly, right, that we need more people in the country and we need to sort of shake up the genes, right? I say get the Prime Minister, and I may have paraphrased that horribly, okay, Minister of Foreign Affairs. I may have paraphrased the third one horribly, right? But how do we then move forward if we don't get a state response to those three statements, right? Those three ideas. How are you going to convince me that you are managing migration properly if you are also telling me that you desperately need the migrants?
Well, certainly I don't speak for the minister, but I am sure well, I would hope that he is not condoning illegality or, compromising by breaking the law.
But,
okay?
We do
need, every country needs citizens to grow its country. But two, we have a right way to do that, right? I don't agree with the visa system right now, especially for Haiti. I'm sorry, if that sounds bad, because I think that we need to address this situation and put a dent in it seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think that dealing with the shanty towns is going to address a lot of that if they're serious and they continue it, right?
Absolutely.
It's a continuous, persistent,
sustainable
effort. To really address it. And it's not about being mean or hating or displacing people, because those persons who are in there, and if they are, the majority of them are work permit, we have the persons who signed for them, they will be held accountable, be they Bahamian or whoever. They will be held and should be held accountable for providing housing for those persons or lose the work permit. It's I've always said to people, we have an enforcement issue. Serious enforcement issue in this country here.
Yeah, I think the administrative crisis is far bigger than any crisis that we're facing.
Yes, we right today, right? We can solve a lot of, if we just enforce our laws that are currently on the books, or we just seriously look at them with a view to changing them.
Mm-hmm.
If there are loopholes that are causing and contributing to a problem getting worse,
absolutely. Thank you.
I just hope that the government is listening, and I applaud the Minister Clay Sweeting, and I hope that he is serious and he's a nationalist and he continues to do what he is trying to do. Okay?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very, very much for your contribution. Okay. Let's go to the next caller, producer. I think I lost them in the conversation. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron.
Morning, morning.
Good morning to your guests.
Morning.
That lady who spoke to us a while ago, she was spot on. And, Aaron, though, my heart pains for those who may be displaced. But, we have to be serious about enforcement of the law, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And that's very key. Because to know that you can force yourself in and then take possession is me fronts. And, like Pastor Miles Monroe said, the late Pastor Miles, now you can't have two that a country stemming within a country. Can't. You just gotta make sure you have law and order. But my heart also goes to the fact that they're going to leave those shanty houses. They need to be placed. But some place should have been arranged for them, if only temporary,
mm-hmm.
and organized. Because they're going to go into the areas where there are unoccupied houses, probably some held by banks and stuff, some held by just vacant in areas, and they're going to take possessions in there. And then they're going to have that same squalor conditions. And that's not suited for any human being. God has made us better than all that.
Yes, ma'am.
And when you think about that, when you see the squalor and all that conditions like that, Aaron, there's so much other factors involved, like a crime.
Okay.
For adults or children. And something has to be done. And the church is summoned, every agency, every leader in this country has streets. And we got to see what's going on in our streets, in our communities. And we have to demand and do more.
Yes, ma'am.
We must have a heart of compassion, but yet we must enforce laws.
Thank you very much.
That's very key.
Absolutely.
Very key. And thank you for keeping up the great work, Aaron.
Thank you very much. Mark, let's go to the next caller. Good morning, caller.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, thank you. How you do?
Aaron, a quick question. Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
The property next to the gold rent, does that belong, that own, that that's the, that do the Bahamian, do the government own that property?
I don't know.
Okay, because I don't know if the people really are aware of that. But that gold rent put in a proposal to purchase that property next to their property?
Yes, there've been articles. I looked at one last night. Where they want to put up another large, either residential or tourist style complex.
Now I stand corrected. I think that property is owned by the government. They have a building on it. The name, they have a sign on front said Fairview.
Okay.
Now, Goldwyn already have a portion, a good one today as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for them now to purchase that property, which is government property, I stand corrected, that extend their project, then there'll be another set of space that they'd be taking up on Goodman's Bay again.
Yep.
So which means now you got Goldwyn on one end and you got Breezes on the next end. So which means now the public beach will be more less space now.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a major problem with that.
I think we all should have a major problem with that.
And I invite all behemoths who really can sing, but just to go there, check the property out. I think it's a white and yellow building on the property with a white iron gate. And I think the government should not sell that to Goldwyn.
I think that, you know, we need land reform. We need real legislation and policies about land payments. I hate to think that somebody's going to be selling a product that promises exclusivity and privacy on the beach, and then Bahamians are going to be made to feel like they are disrupting some great venture because they want to enjoy their own beaches.
Hey, thank you very much. I have a major problem with that.
Thank you very much,
Paul. I have a major problem, and that is one of our prime beaches with left.
Yep, absolutely.
So I invite the Bahamians just to go and have a look at it, and I say no. And you know what the gentleman said? That it will create hundreds of jobs. Why do officers use this word?
Because we have been beaten down into plantation models, and we haven't been able to escape it, even though we're in charge of ourselves now.
Okay, but please, Bahamians, let's check on it and see what's going on with that.
Absolutely.
Thank you so very much.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Let's go to the next caller. Good morning.
Hi, Aaron.
Good morning. How you do?
Fine, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Palmer.
Good morning.
Listen, the gentleman who was talking just now, the lady before him, I kind of in agreement with them, especially the lady who was talking about where these persons, the space persons, are going to be going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of derelict vehicles in this country. And one of the things that I've come to realize with the Haitian Nationals, they tend to share spaces. Most Bahamians, we like our own space.
That's because we solve problems with money. We Bahamians don't have them. I mean, we got more dollars than cents is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I understand. So they would just relocate someplace else that is, again, unsuitable for living. You understand me? I'm hoping, I don't hear anything about it, but I'm hoping that those who are made to move, who are given notice to move, I'm hoping that they're given an option as to where they can go.
Yeah.
That's something I think is important also for us to know. You know, I do feel for them, but I'm hoping that just how you are given notice, you know, there's a listing of options as to where you can relocate your system. I think that will be very helpful for a lot of them because, you know.
You know what I'm going to do, cousin? Mm. I can get me one old abandoned bus or food truck, right? Or container. Mm-hmm. And I can turn it into a high-end Airbnb, right? So maybe we could encourage Bahamians to do the same, and then we can pass along.
You can't have it in too much of a high-end now, Aaron, because it was one thing that I've come to notice about those persons. Spending money is not something they like doing.
Well, no, it's not that they don't like spending money. It's that the purpose of the journey is mm-hmm. to be able to change our lives drastically or to support and to support other people back who cannot mm-hmm. escape the war-torn conflict that they've been. I mean, Haiti's been occupied for the last, minimum 15 years mm-hmm. since the earthquake. They've been occupied. And so it's not that they don't like to spend money. It's that they have a commitment to the purpose of the journey. You're going to spend money that could be used for collective and personal development on disposable personal experiences.
But you know, the word that you use is personal development that concerns me because, you know, there's a lot of them that has been there for years, many years. And there seem to be, from looking there, that there is no personal development. They just come in, they find some place to lay their head, and boof, they stay there. And, you know, they try to help persons back home. without trying to help themselves first. But I feel like if you're in a better position for yourself, you would be better able to help those at home. That's how I see it, but I guess they don't see it that way. That's one of the reasons why I say they don't seem to like to spend money.
I mean, I put it to you like this. I still live with my mother. She's aging, so it's not a problem. But I could tell you this. I grew up in the era when your light bill was the same as your mortgage.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if a migrant says, look here, we could do without the light bill, I understand why. But look here, I got another caller on the line, cousin. Yeah. But I appreciate the point that you're making, which is if your immediate conditions right now, you're in a better position to support those back home and to support yourself. I really appreciate that. And there are lots of things we can learn from these migrant populations, as well as there are a lot of things that they can learn from us. And they do. I think it's us on the other side that we tend not to see the value in their cultural practices as migrants in other countries. Mr. Palmer, let's go to this next caller, and then I got to get to the text line. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. You still there? Okay, we lost that call. We're going to go to a break, Mr. Palmer, and read some text. And then I'm just going to list off the stories that I had on deck, you know, just in case nobody called. Yeah. You guys, stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. On the clock, we'll be right back.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Girl, you see how Cora eye look funny, all black up yesterday?
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
So what you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now, you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman. Does mind her business, take care of them churn, and go to church every Sunday.
So what you think we should do? I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence, and we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I line up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call her text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how does this work?
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them and the messages get on mix up mix phone so nobody can know what you saying?
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
Good morning and welcome back. Mr. Palmer, let's hit the...
So, you know, Aaron, I was thinking, yeah. You know, we have more sense from our listeners who ring on this radio station that we should just set up a committee of them to advise the government on the different, you know, topics that we talk about, because they're hitting the key points, right?
Absolutely.
The key points, and some of the key points we don't really want to talk about, they're actually expressing them.
Yeah, and so much compassion.
And compassion, too. This isn't like, you know, it is thought through coming from a compassionate perspective.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that. I have a text here that's a bit rough. I'm going to leave that to the end. Another text, great show as usual. South Florida was built from migrants, mostly Bahamians. That's why Miami love us and we love Miami back, right? So how do we juxtapose this, our experience now, with the experience of Bahamian migrants, say Contract Days, Conkville, Coconut Grove, in those days? It would be great if we... Maybe I could do some research, look into the archives, and see responses from communities in South Florida to the presence of these migrants, right? And whether there was a fear. And then my question is, does a migrant only have value when they add economic value to your life, right? Mm-hmm. But thank you for...
You know, the other interesting thing, and we haven't really heard this, and that's to follow the money trail. I think, you know, whenever you see there's an issue, an unresolved issue, a difficult issue, like illegal immigration, that's been with us for I mean, as long as I can remember. But we never really follow the money, do we?
Right.
We never follow money because there is, in any area, I don't care what you call that area, there is some form of corruption.
Right.
Like, or there's some that arises that creates a series of events that are very difficult to change.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at what's happening in the southern border in the United States, this is another, I don't know if people have watched this on the news, there is a massive illegal migration. Now, a caller talked about, I think, did you mention about votes? Because in California, you don't have to show citizenship in order to vote. So it's a plan to get illegal immigrants over who vote a particular way. So you have to look at that perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, we may be doing it. We know other countries are doing it, right? And then there's a lot of money for housing. Well, in the United States, I think $3 billion are being spent in accommodating illegal immigrants at the moment, which is
wow.
A massive amount of money. That's phone cards, accommodation, etc. So follow the money, I think. If we had some investigative journalists that could just follow the money in this,
mm-hmm.
try and follow the money, I think we would get some answers.
And it works, because why is the government focused on building homes that people require mortgages for when the majority of people... Mm-hmm. will never be able to qualify for a mortgage, additional banks or through the Bahamas Mortgage Corporation.
Who's going to come up with 20% and the closing costs?
Absolutely. Yeah. Another text here. My issue is that once we destroy the shanty towns, where will all the thousands that are instantly homeless go? Where's the plan there? Another text. Aaron, you and Rodney need to join forces. Said. Fosses, I don't know why that word came out, and start an NGO and try to stabilize Haiti so they can have a better way of life. Maybe the gang leaders in Haiti needs to hear from caring persons like yourself. Dear Texter, maybe I could repeat this. I think that Haiti has been occupied by the U.S. and the global north since the earthquake. Right? The tsunami in the Philippines. 10-plus years ago. Producer, let's go to that call. It basically wiped out the population of the Bahamas in one fell swoop. Let's offer people the sort of empathy and grace that we hope others offer us. Good morning, caller.
And I'm all your guest. Now, I heard you all just not talking, but people who went over there on the contract, they were sent for. They didn't jump on the boat and say, yeah, am I, you know.
Did everybody come back?
Yeah, some came back.
No, I said, did everybody come back like good, lawful citizens? Or did some of them decide that they was going to make a life with their new wife?
Well, some stayed and some come back. But by the way, they didn't render legally. They were sent for and they were taken care of.
Right. Many of the migrants that we're talking about in these situations were also sent for. Like, they had proper status when they came in the country.
Right.
Or they are the children of people who had proper status when they came in the country, or children who have no control over the circumstances of their birth.
I'm talking about Florida now. When you gave from your men the Bahamians sent over to Florida on the contract.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what y'all were saying too.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't just jump on the boat and say, yeah, I arrive and run, go to sleep, and then hide, and then we gain them weight from it. Then they get away, go squat on the land, and yes. Plenty of it is our government problem, and I can also go. Plenty of it is the government not enforcing the law.
Administrative
crisis.
Now, if
you sit back and you keep pity-parting and pity-parting, ain't nothing going to happen. It can get worse and worse out of hand. And that's what a lot of Bahamians have a problem with.
How do you...
Tell me how they come here. You ain't tell them to go build here. See, that's their culture. That's what they do in Haiti. Okay? So we have to... put a front to it, and I applaud the minister. He at least he the one who's doing the job. They can find places to go. You know, and by the way, that time they was given notice there a long time ago. They only given it officially. The lady was complaining they came, you know, and she was trying to get them off long time. But again, we have to start from somewhere. If we don't do nothing, we will soon be outnumbered. And not only that, a lot of them, like I said. And the law then was not doing their job. All in Shanty Town, all over. I mean, no Shanty Town been there.
Listen,
okay?
So let me ask you something. Let me ask you something.
I can hear you respond.
No, I want to ask you something. Let's don't go. So I repeat what I saw. Three statements made in the media. One is that economists, this is what our government tell us, that economists told them that we need a million more people in your tax base to maintain the lifestyle that you've become accustomed to, right? The second is that we have a labor, and I call it organized labor, right? We have an organized labor shortage, and that we need the migrants to maintain the pace of development that the government has undertook. And the third is that we need to grow our, we need to diversify and grow our citizen base, right? We need more people in the country, not for economic purposes, but for other reasons.
Yeah.
Having those three statements thrown at you from the from a government space, right? Mm-hmm. What do you expect the government to do next? I expect the government now to put it on the table and say, these are the three things we're dealing with. Let's talk about how we manage migration to the benefit of the Bahamian without oppressing or taking advantage of the migrant.
Well, I don't see no taking advantage. It's just that we refuse to carry out our laws, and it bites us long time, and I blame all these modern-day politicians.
Okay.
And that's the problem.
Thank you.
You come to your country, mm-hmm. but you want the right set of people to come to your country. See, Canada needs migration, but they ain't just letting anybody who come to there.
But in that instance, Canada is responsible for the brain drain. They taking the best out of your country, destabilizing your development.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. They want certain people come to their country. So what? You want just anybody come to your country and say you need a million people?
But guess what? Bahamians don't want the educated, the well-skilled Haitian to come here to compete with them.
They want construction worker,
the no-skilled migrant to come here to do the work they don't want to do.
Bahamians don't see themselves
benefiting economically from the migrant population who's doing the work that they don't want to do. Bahamians thought that they would benefit off the backs of migrant labor.
Yeah, but here's my point. If they don't come, let's come the right way. You need that amount of laborers. You don't got them here. You put out a market, because I know a lot of Bahamians are away. And then you say, now how many you see? And you say, I have 50 Bahamians here. I need 50 more laborers. And you send to them.
Right. That's why I think it's...
You don't just jump on the boat and come here, and then, you know, I have a problem with that.
I'm with you. I think it's an administrative crisis, and the state has an obligation. If it is in any way encouraging or allowing other people to encourage migrants to enter the country undocumented or work without proper documentation, then the onus is on the government to create a scheme, a mechanism, a system, understanding that you need the migrants to properly manage their presence. And in terms of children in waiting, because one of the callers referenced their concern about knocking down the homes of people that have a right to be Bahamian, tracking these people, right, to make sure that they don't get deported unnecessarily if they are quote-unquote Bahamians in waiting. Oh boy, we are all out of time. A text here says, from the minute the notice is given, people are asked if they have a place to live or if they need assistance. I hear people saying that they should make sure, and that is a part of it. The amount of rental opportunities in some areas is an issue, and the fact that some don't want to stay in the temporary housing, but it is not a situation where no one is addressing that. But I tell you, even if people are addressing it, how effective will their efforts be if, on the other hand, the minister responsible for tourism is begging Bahamians to open up their homes and rental properties for tourism and not for labor and not for Bahamians? Anyway, Mr. Palmer, thank you very much. I wanted to talk about this article, woman shot by police after attempting to knock down officers, but I haven't been able to find it in the printed papers. It's online. I just want to say, I don't know if the video was wrong or if the reporting is wrong, but up here, we can talk about that later. Thank you so much for joining me this morning, Mr. Palmer.
You're welcome.
Love absolutely. You guys have a great day. CA Newry is up next with Guardian Radio AM.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Nassau, Bahamas.